Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Covenant Eyes podcast. We're so glad to be with you today. I know it's going to be a tough topic, but it's such an important one, giving the victims an identity today with our special guest. And before we get to her, I want to introduce co-host today, Karen Potter. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Brandon. How's it going?
I'm doing really well. It's been a really good day. We've had several recordings. We just continue to have amazing guests like the one that we have on for this show. I'm so blown away by all the good work being done. We see a lot of the bad things happening around us, right? And we don't often hear about the amazing things happening. And that's what I love about this podcast, is we get to share some of those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And today is no different. Like, we are going to be talking to Linda from the Samaritan Woman Organization. She's going to share with us all of the work that they have been doing. We're going to dive into some tough topics. So make sure that you're prepared. We're going to talk about things that need to be talked about, but they are tough topics like sex trafficking and survivors and victims and how we need to create a space for them, especially as churches and as Christians in the United States. We need to be helping and supporting this movement. And then just kind of giving some hope to those out there that have a heart to really help those that are in the industry and need a way out. So with that, Brandon, let's go ahead and kick off today's podcast. And Linda, welcome to the podcast. We're so glad you're joining us.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be here. And it is a tough topic to talk about and to listen to, hear about the victims, the survivors. But it is an important topic because we will never put an end to this unless people are educated and unless they know what they're looking for. So I'm excited and honored to be here with you today.
Linda is with the Samaritan Woman. She's on the board of the directors. She has been working with their organization for a while, and she has direct involvement with survivors. She was invited to contribute to the curriculum development on human trafficking for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So she is an expert on this topic. And Linda, why don't you give us a little bit of a preview on what Samaritan Women does and a little bit about the organization founding?
So back in 2007, our executive director and founder, Jean Allert, was prompted by God that she needed to do something for women that were hurting. And initially, she thought maybe it was going to be women who were hurting from addiction or homelessness. But God made it clear that she was to reach out and serve survivors of human trafficking. So that was back in 2007. In 2010, I started volunteering with the organization. At that time, we were doing street outreach. So several times a month, we would be out on the streets of Baltimore, and we would be talking with women who were out there. We had a place where they could come and take a shower. They could get some clean clothes. We'd have food for them. And then we opened the shelter a year or two after that, and then women came in, and it was a two-year program for survivors of human trafficking. And we had women come to us that had master's degrees. We had women that hadn't completed, sixth grade education. So it was the full spectrum. We were mainly set up for adult survivors, female adult survivors. We did accept, there was about 20% of the survivors that we accepted that were under the age of 18, because there's such a lack of shelter care for that age group. We opened the doors and did all the things we needed to do to be able to take in the younger survivors. So we did that until around 2018, God said, okay, this is the next thing you're going to do. You are going to help. Don't you love that when God does it?
Yes.
This is the next thing you're going to do. You are going to help open new shelters, because what we were seeing is so many shelters were closing because people have great intentions. They want to help, but they weren't equipped. And so God put it on our hearts that we needed to equip shelters that wanted to open. And so we started the Institute for Shelter Care, and it is a mentorship program for organizations that would like to open shelters. At this point, we have mentored or are mentoring 14 shelters. And in the fall, we are looking at adding a few more. So it's a 3-year mentorship program, and we work directly with those shelters to help them. We have best practices, and they learn all about what we learned the hard way of, a way to have a shelter, to run a shelter, and to do it well. The other thing that we didn't expect was that we were going to have existing shelters come to us and ask for help because they were struggling or they were worn out. And so we also have a group of existing faith-based shelters that we work with. So it was around 2019, we stopped taking in any more women, and we had our graduate program open, and our last woman that was in the graduate program left around 2019. And then, so full time now we have been working with shelters to open new shelters and to help sustain shelters that are already open.
That's such important work. Thank you so much for being willing to do that. You know, and we'll dive into a little bit later the desperate need for shelters in America, actually. But mm-hmm. I think I want to go back a little bit and talk about sex trafficking itself. And one of the things that I would like to hit on here is that there isn't a community in America, which is probably why there's a desperate need for shelters. There isn't a community in America that is immune to sex trafficking.
That is so true. I remember when I first got involved that I thought it was women, children, men being brought in from other countries into the United States, and that was who was being trafficked. What I quickly learned was that it is people in the United States that are being trafficked, our citizens in the United States, and it happens in every state in the United States. Polaris, who runs the National Human Trafficking Hotline, they have a map, and you can go on and you can look and see where they've had reports of human trafficking. And every state has had reports of human trafficking. So you're not immune to it. I've talked to people and they've said, oh, no, not in my community. I live in such a nice community. It doesn't happen in my state. I can tell you it absolutely does. It is happening all across the United States. And so many times it's in plain sight, but we just don't know. We don't know what to look for, or we want to believe that that wouldn't happen in our neighborhood or our state. And so we don't see it, or we don't recognize the signs. So that's why I appreciate being on and talking about this, so we can let people know, what to look for and who are those victims.
One of the things that I think is, a myth or whatever, is that only females can be trafficked. Mm-hmm. And, that I've heard the same thing that you just mentioned, that, our community is really safe. We don't have that happening here. And unfortunately, those things really have to be called to account, because sex trafficking happens in good communities and all the communities in between. It's whatever. I mean, it happens everywhere. Do you guys also work with and support boys and men that are being trafficked? Or is it just strictly for women in the work that you do at Samaritan?
So we stopped taking survivors in about 2019. So now we just strictly work with shelters that want to open. When we were taking in survivors, we were only taking in females, adult females. But there is a deficit in care for shelters with who take in men and boys. And there's also a deficit in shelters who take in women with children. So, and it is the age group is from, you know, little boys and little girls up to, you know, very mature men and women. So we really need to get out of the mindset of, you know, it's only women, it's young children, it's men, it's boys, and we need to realize that it's all around us.
You know, I think one thing that's important as we talk about victims and survivors is to recognize their dignity and their identity as beloved sons and daughters. And so you were mentioning, you know, at a very basic level, you know, young boys, young girls, but who are the victims? You know, where are they coming from? Can you give us some insight into the identity of these folks?
Their identity is that they are vulnerable. There's been something that's happened in their life to make them vulnerable. It was about 96% of the women that came through our program have been sexually abused as children. So if when a child is sexually abused, that sets them up to be vulnerable. Children are vulnerable if they live in homes where there's drug abuse, where there's alcohol abuse. Children are vulnerable when there are disasters in an area, natural disasters, or there's families lose jobs, you know, mothers and fathers lose jobs, and people are struggling to make money to provide for their families. So all of those are vulnerabilities that puts a child at risk. And then, so if a child is sexually assaulted, they grow up, as they grow, they think, well, that's what I'm worth. It happened to me once. That's what I'm worth. Or a child may be living in a home with an abusive parent, and all they hear is, you know, you're worthless, you're no good. Maybe they're being, you know, physically abused, and they want to get away. And so those vulnerabilities set victims up for a pimp to come in, a trafficker to come in and say, I'm here. I'll be your savior. I'll take care of you. I'll love you. I'll provide for you. And yes, people who live in poverty are maybe more vulnerable, but we worked with women who had come from very affluent areas of the country, and they had been sexually abused, maybe never told anyone. And then so that set them up with that vulnerability. So it's people don't choose this life. I've heard people say, oh, well, she chose that. That's what she wants, or that's what he wants. Or that, no, there's not one little girl or little boy in the world that says, oh, when I grow up, I want to be sexually abused or raped over and over and over again. I want a stranger to come in and rape me 20 or 30 times a day. No child wants that. No person has the aspiration of growing up to be a prostituted person. And so when I hear people say, well, it's a choice that he made or she made, it's not really a choice if you don't have any other options or you don't see any other options. And that's what I want people to know. It's not a choice when you don't have other options. It's not a choice when you have been abused as a child and you don't see yourself in any other light. So that's what I want people to know about these victims, about these survivors, that they're real people. And there, by the grace of God, it really could have been any of us in this situation. And Brandon, you got me on a soapbox there. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's thank you for spending so much time on that, because they are real people. And it's so often to play the blame game, even sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to do that, you know, mm-hmm. and say, well, their life choices led them there. And so I think spending time here and talking about that was very crucial to the discussion. Talk a little bit about things to watch for. You know, you mentioned a few minutes ago just about how it could be happening right in front of us and we wouldn't recognize it. So especially for our ministry leaders and our churches that are listening today, what should they be watching for? What are the warning signs that this is actually taking place in their community?
I want parents to be aware first and foremost, because these predators are online and they are doing everything they can to reach your children. And I would encourage parents to know who your children are talking to, when they're talking to them. These predators go through the games that kids play online and talk to them. They reach out and they try to befriend these kids in Snapchat and Facebook and all the different social media out there. And so first of all, I want parents to know who their children are communicating with online. Be aware of that. And then for people in the community, just look around you. If there is something that seems odd, I want you to report it. I can give a perfect example of a colleague. She was out to dinner and she was at a very nice restaurant. And she said she looked over and she saw this this man who was much older than the young girl that he was with. The young girl didn't have a phone. She was inappropriately dressed for the setting. She had on a very sexy dress. You could tell that she looked uncomfortable in the setting, and she was not looking at him and engaging. Every once in a while, he would say something to her, and she would put her head down and acknowledge that he had spoken to her. She went on her phone and called the National Human Trafficking Hotline and told them exactly what she was seeing, what restaurant she was at, and they took a report. Now she doesn't know if, you know, how they followed up or what happened, but if they get enough reports in that area, you know they are going to do an investigation there. There's another example of a woman who noticed that there were cars coming in and out of her neighbor's driveway all hours of the day and night. And she thought maybe it was drugs. So she called the police. They raided the home and it was a brothel. So wow. It was right there in her neighborhood at the end of a cul-de-sac, and she just noticed something unusual. I just had a colleague tell me she was at an airport and noticed again, this young girl was with this older man. It just didn't seem right. Again, she didn't have a phone. To me, that's a big red flag. When a teenager doesn't have a phone or someone doesn't have a phone, it's like, oh my goodness, what is going on there? And then she called and reported to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. If parents or youth leaders notice that an adolescent is suddenly changing their behavior, they suddenly become withdrawn, or they are wearing clothes that they wouldn't typically wear that seem inappropriate, they have money or things that they didn't have before. Because oftentimes what traffickers will do is in the very beginning, they will buy their victims' gifts. They will give them lots of attention. They will shower them with attention and gifts and all kinds of fun things. And so I would say if a youth leader or a parent or a family member suddenly notices that there's a change in a child's behavior, or if they notice that they are that they're going online and they shut themselves in their room and they don't want to be around parents, and I would say you need to be in that room and see what's going on, because there are some traffickers who traffic people online. So kids, adolescents, adults are asked to do things online for someone else who is paid to be online and watch that person do it. It's called camming, and we want to be aware of that. So it's the internet is, mm-hmm. We definitely need to be aware of that. Yeah.
You know, I love that you kind of give some real world examples. I remember, gosh, it must have been, I'm just guessing, but maybe a decade ago, my husband and I were traveling and we were in Arizona and we were on public transportation. We just noticed an older man with a younger girl. Same scenario that you just brought up. My mommy flags were up, like something was not right. And at that time, that was before I, worked at Covenant Eyes. I didn't know all the things that I knew, but I just knew something was wrong. And I remember telling my husband, I'm like, we need to tell somebody something. And then I remember second guessing myself, like, what if that's just his daughter, and she's just being a rebellious teen? Or what if, I started making all these things in my head and I was like, no. So, at that time, I didn't know who to call or what to do. So I'm glad you brought up the information that you did on who to call. We just reported it to the public transportation desk when we got to the stop. I don't know if they followed through, but I think it's something that church leaders and church goers, we need to be aware, pay attention to your surroundings. And if you see something that doesn't look quite right, take those action steps and contact the hotline and report that. We all have cell phones now, so you can Google the phone number. You can look it up. If anything, find a police officer or somebody to report that information to. But I just think it's good. And I think that was an important thing to remind people, because so often we're so into our own world and what we're doing in our busyness that we fail to see things like that.
Yeah. And I want people to remember that you don't have to prove that it was trafficking. All you have to do is report what you see. I use this scenario. I teach classes, or I've taught classes on recognizing child abuse. And I always tell people, you don't have to prove the abuse. All you have to do is report what you see. And that's the same thing with trafficking, sex trafficking. If you see something that you don't think looks right, report it. You don't need to prove it. You just need to give information to the people who will investigate it.
Well, and I think it's important to report it rather than not report it, right? Because hopefully the authorities that you reported to are going to do their investigation. If it turns out to be nothing, then that's fantastic. But, imagine not reporting it, it actually being something, and that person ends up getting even more hurt than they were in that particular situation. We just have a couple minutes left here, Linda. I want to make sure we spend some time on this, because I think this is, we obviously have the call to action about what to watch for, but then there's a call to action for how we can get involved in helping grow the number of shelters in America, because there is a need. Can you spend a couple minutes just talking about that?
Yes. Well, there's a couple of ways. Maybe God is calling you to open a shelter. And if He is, please just don't make a decision that, oh, I'm going to open my home and bring people in. That's not the right way to do it. Contact us and we will be glad to help you or put you in touch with, you know, people that maybe there's a shelter in your area where you can work with that shelter. But, you know, maybe God's calling you into this work. So I would, first of all, say be open to that. Maybe God's calling you to, maybe there's a shelter in your area and you can volunteer there. And so if you go to the Samaritan Women, we have a map that has all the shelters that we know of across the United States. And we are constantly updating that. Or maybe you are saying, I don't have the time to volunteer. I can't open a shelter. So maybe you would donate to a local shelter or to the Samaritan Women Institute for Shelter Care and help us provide the training. We offer scholarships for these, for people that want to start shelters, because we know how difficult it is to get the money to get going. And so we have a, we offer scholarships to people who want to open a shelter. There are not enough shelters across the United States. There are hundreds of beds and there are thousands and thousands of survivors.
Yeah. And I just want to point out too, just I'm on your website looking at the All 50 campaign in particular. Mm-hmm. And on there, it says there's 9 states in the United States with no shelter program and 8 states with only one. That's a third of states that have very little support for those who are coming out of sex trafficking, for those survivors. So if you're listening and you happen to be in one of those states, I'm sure you can reach out to the Samaritan Women and find out, like, am I in one of those states? I really encourage you to take action in some way, like Linda was talking about. Linda, thanks so much for being on with us today. Know that we'll put the links to the Samaritan Women and some of the things that we've been talking about in the show notes so our listeners have complete access to all that.
Great. Thank you. And I appreciate the invitation to be here, because this conversation may help one survivor, and it was certainly worth it if it helps one person.
100%. I mean, Jesus left the 99 to go after the one. And so we often feel that way too in the work that we do. Like, if we help even one person break free from pornography, you know, it makes all of it worth it. So thank you again, Linda. Karen, as we close, any takeaways for you today?
Well, so many, but I think the first and foremost would just be that there is a great need for increased beds, like she just mentioned, and shelter space. And that as churches, like, we have a great opportunity. We could really engage. We could sponsor. We could find someone that's passionate about this in our churches and help them facilitate creating a shelter for the women in the community. Because I did look at that map while you guys were conversating, and there really is very few places in the United States that don't have activity recorded. And some, and quite frankly, half the country has severe sex trafficking activity reported. So this problem is huge, and we have got to engage, and we need to be there to help restore these women and even and men that come out of this, this space, and they need that hope and that healing. So it just was a good reminder for me in that way.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway is awareness. You know, it's so easy to, when we're going about our day to day, you know, we're traveling through an airport or, you know, just on the street, it's so easy to put a screen up in front of our face and get so lost in those things that we forget to be aware of our surroundings. And just by being aware of what's going on around us, we could help save lives. So I just want to offer that as a challenge. You know, we talked in another interview about FaceTime, right? Not the app, but actually, you know, eyeball time. And I think that's really important when we're thinking about this. We never know who is in need of our help at any given moment. And if we're more aware of what's happening around us, there is the opportunity potentially that we could save a life. And I don't know, for some reason, that's just really sticking out to me of, like, let's put our screens down when we're out in public and just pay attention to what's going on around us, especially since it's such a prevalent problem and it can be happening right in front of us. Karen?
That's so good and such a good reminder. There's so many reasons for us to put our technology down, and that is definitely one of them. So with that, I do want to thank our guest, Linda, for joining us today. I appreciate all that you're doing. Please let us know how we can continue to support your organization. We will share all of the links to your website and to any other resources we mentioned in this podcast. So thank you, Linda, for joining us today.
Thank you both. It was my pleasure.
Yes, thank you. And thank you to all of you for listening to the Covenant Eyes podcast. We love to hear from you. So please drop us a line, give us a review, send us a social media, you know, private message, whatever it is, reach out to us and let us know how we can better serve you and your work there in the church with your congregation and then out in the public eye. So please let us know what we can do to support you. And from everyone at Covenant Eyes, thank you so much. Have a great day.